Welcome to part two of Storybreaker's special dynamic live reading of Star Trek, the original series' greatest episode never made. My name is Chris Brennan, and I hope you enjoy the show. Before we start, I just quickly wanted to give you a little rundown of the players for today's show. Playing LeBec, the orator, and the janitor is Wayne Talbot. Playing Beckwith, the guardian, crewman, and the cook is David O'Neill. Playing McCoy, the renegade and trooper, is Kieran Marcantonio. I like saying that name. Playing Rand and Edith is the lovely Lauren Murphy. Playing Mr. Spock is Matthew O'Brien. Captain James T. Kirk is Donna Humphreys. And your narrator for the show is Niall Bruton. I hope you enjoy part two, and stick around afterwards as we provide a mini review of the greatest episode never made. And if you dig it, then please share it on Facebook and Twitter for all your peeps to enjoy. Okay then, ladies and gentlemen, Star Trek Live.
Before the break, Spock was being racially abused by his co-workers and everyone in New York City, and he witnessed Sister Edith Keeler addressing a crowd. Now that we're all back to date with what's going on, and like myself, I'm going to read it off the page. New York Street. Thank you. Edith is selecting a few meager fruits and vegetables from a pushcart at the curb on the busy street we saw earlier. Kirk and Spock stalk her from the security of an apartment entrance. Hashtag creeps. You're certain. The clock was blue with the sky of the old Earth, fastened by a sunburst pin, and they said there was the key. Her name is Keeler. An amazing coincidence. There are no coincidences in time. The Guardian said Beckwith would be drawn to the vocal point, so we're here. It was inevitable. She seems such a pleasant girl. She's a catalyst. Things will happen to kind because of her.
Very alive.
Wait a minute.
What? We said it.
I wonder what things.
Or what things won't happen.
That isn't our concern. We have to stay with her. Beckwith will find her, and we'll find Beckwith. A tenement. Edith climbs the worn and sooty stoop and enters the building. Kirk and Spock standing beside a closed-up store with a gone-out-of-business sign on the soap-smeared front window.
This is where she came last night. She's in cubicle number 18. Apartment. Nomenclature. I'd probably get an apartment here, if I can. Or I'd probably better get an apartment here. That would make much more sense, if I can. If there's a vacancy, will I be able to live here? These people seem to have all sorts of irrational categories for who can live where. Ghettos, is that right?
Please, yes, you can live here too, but you'd better keep out of sight as much as possible. Find some place where you can keep an eye on the apartment without being seen.
He'll be coming through day after tomorrow. Will it take him long to reach her as it took us? There's no way of knowing.
It's incredible to think how Beckwith coming through hundreds of years in a straight line to her the day after tomorrow.
We travel the same line, straight to her.
Rooftop. Kirk and Spock are flat out on the tenement roof, staring across an air shaft to a little window. Apartment 18. I wonder who lives there. From time to time, Edith can be seen moving back and forth. She sings a popular song of the period, which can be heard under. Kirk has just crawled in.
Okay, you get some sleep. I'll spell you.
Is there anything to eat?
I bought 9 pounds of cabbage and asparagus. The grocer is beginning to look at me.
It's the only earth food I can keep down. No hydroponics, no synthetics. My system needs Yobash and Eva.
I can imagine how inconspicuous you'd be with purple kava juice running down your Chinese face. Stick with the asparagus.
She's keeping a regular schedule, as am I.
Too much information, Spock.
She's quite lovely.
Not beautiful.
Isn't she, Mrs. Spock? This isn't an easy pursuit to begin with. Complications could make it impossible. What? I have a theory, Captain, that the easiest world for a spaceman to go native in is his own world.
Don't be ridiculous. The stakes here are too high.
That was precisely my feeling.
He crawls away in the dark as Kirk looks after him for several meaningful beats. Then slowly looks back towards the brightness of the window and Edith silhouetted. With her song and the ascendant, we hold on Kirk, ambivalent. Tenant stairwell, daytimes. Edith comes down brightly, but not beautifully. But quite livingly. There is a joy in her movement, enthusiasm and spring in her step. You know, a man could delight in this female. So very womanly and yet so self-possessed in her maturity. A voice halts her.
Hello?
She pauses with her hand on the banister. She looks back. We see Kirk leaning over the banister on the floor above.
Hello?
I wanted to say hello.
You did it very well. Would you like to try again? Hello.
I guess it was a pretty lame way to get to meet you.
On the contrary, it worked marvelously well. I'm Edith Keeler.
I'm Jim Kirk. I just moved in.
You've a very pleasant accent. Iowa?
Iowa. Yes, that's very good. Most people don't catch it.
I have a good ear. From singing in the church choir, you get to know pitch.
Well.
You're quite handsome.
Why, thank you. And, you were quite lovely.
Now that all that is out of the way, would you like to take a walk with me? I'm going to pick up some stolen merchandise.
Kirk is astonished. His expression tells us so.
Don't be bothered. I'm not a thief. Some young boys I know well, they made some mistakes. And I talked to Lieutenant Gleason at the precinct, and he said the goods were returned then.
You do quite a lot of that sort of good work, don't you?
I tried to keep busy.
Love to walk along with you.
They move together towards the door to the tenement leading onto the street. Spock is there, watching from the shadows. Kirk and Spock now against the blackness. Why?
Note, this is why. Because this conversation is as much inside their natures as outside. Thank you.
You're my captain. I can't tell you. If I'm wrong, I want to know. That's my opinion. Why? It's necessary to be near her. We can't possibly know the precise moment Beckwith will find her. I don't think that's your reason. Since when did you become a telepath? Empathy is not telepathy. I can feel it coming off you in waves. You're getting involved. I just want to find Beckwith! Captain, fooling me is simple. Just give me the order. I'll change my opinion. But we talk, Mr. Spock. We sit and talk about everything. She's a fine person. Listen, I've been on the move since I was old enough to ship on a wiper in an old chemical fuel rockets. It's been time, Mr. Spock, a lot of time. And the women you've known have been casual liaisons in the port, cities and the pleasure planets. It's that way for every spacer, Captain. But this is something else, total communication. I can say to her in the morning, I bought a bad pair of shoes and they're too tight, and say nothing more about it till it's late at night. And if I say I should have known better, she'll say, well, we could try to stretch them out a little. She knows, Mr. Spock, she understands everything. It can be a foolish thing, Captain. We're only phantoms here. We haven't even been born yet. Why? Why does it have to end here? You can't change the past without changing the future.
They are speaking faster now, almost atop of one another's words.
Why can't I bring her back with me? She isn't important here. The way she feels, the goodness, the things she believes for the world, they aren't ready for it!
She's going to die.
There is a shocked moment of silence.
The guardians told us. We just didn't interpret it. But I've been running his words again in my mind.
No!
He will seek that which must die and give it life. Stop him.
I don't believe that. They didn't mean it at all. How could her death alter the course of history?
In a million ways. If she lived, she might give birth to a child that would become a dictator.
That's all extrapolation. None of it is real. You're guessing.
In a few years, this planet will have a war, a great war. What if her philosophy spread and it kept America out of the war for a mere 2 years longer? And in that time, Germany perfected its atomic weapons. The outcome of the war would be reversed.
It's insanity!
History, Captain. There are spools of records on the Enterprise. I play them all. It's just one possibility. She has to die. History and time demand it.
I don't want to think about it. Leave me alone.
I'll leave you alone, Captain. But time won't.
New York Street. Kirk and Edith walk hand in hand down a busy street, dressed for a Saturday night. As they pass a series of shops, we begin to hear music from one of them, a jaunty tune of the times, played on a laggy piano, being sung by one of those girls who sang from sheet music in the 30s. She's singing Please, copyright 1932 by Famous Music Corp. You know, the one, please lend your little ear to my plea. Hello. As they pass down the below street level music shop, Edith stops and cocks her head to one side. She smiles, rocks to the music. Kirk grins.
Let's go down for a minute, Jim. I have time before I speak and I love the song.
Kirk nods in agreement. Edith starts down the wrought iron stairs to the shop as Jim walks behind her. Edith slips. She starts to fall. Jim reaches out to catch her, and just before he could catch her in her arm, his hand closes, spastically, like an asshole, as he falls. As she falls down the stairs. He let her fall. You let her fall!
She's not beautiful. Yeah.
He remembered what he was there for. Certainly not picking anyone up. It seems as though Edith may have died, but we see she is merely lying there, bruised. She seems to know that he let her fall, and a confused, hurt expression crosses her face. Kirk now rushes down to her.
Are you all right?
Yes, I'm all right, Jim.
Kirk turns away slightly, and we see the torment in his expression and the wonder on Edith's face. New York Street, now on the street with the Kikikikam shop and the bread shop, now minus the lamppost Kirk vaporized earlier. But there is nothing happening. Kirk and Spock appear from opposite sides.
My computations could be wrong. Let's hope not.
Let's hope not.
Where's Miss Keeler?
At the free milk kitchen. She'll be out of the way for at least 2 hours.
There!
A brick wall suddenly begins to shimmer. Note, not the transporter effect. Another. Thank you. As I said, a brick wall suddenly begins to shimmer as Beckwith abruptly becomes substantial. He stands there, looking around, trying to get oriented. Then, Kirk and Spock dash after him. He sees them coming and turns first one way and then another. But he doesn't know which way to go, because he's never been to, like, 1930s America. Spock gets across the street, but as Kirk moves to follow, just a feet behind him, a huge beer truck rumbles down the street, and Kirk is cut off. Spock reaches Beckwith, who falls back against the brick wall. Beckwith lands Spock with a sucker punch and rushes away as the truck passes and Kirk reaches Spock. He helps him up.
Which way?
Toward the milk kitchen.
They tense and race down the street. In the tenement, the front door opens and Kirk brings Edith in behind him. He's rushing her, holding her by the arm.
Jim, what is this?
You shouldn't be out there alone.
She pulls away, stands her ground. She's wearing the cape with the sunburst, but a different dress of the period.
What in the world are you talking about? You come dashing into the milk kitchen and practically abscond with me. Now, Jim, I've got responsibilities.
Edith, do you trust me?
Jim, I...
No, please! Do you trust me?
Jim, I love you.
Both pain and pleasure enter Kirk's expression. She does not see it. He tilts her face and stares at her for a long moment, and then kisses her. Yeah.
Edith.
Do you love me, Jim? It's the first time for me, so I don't know.
Very much. Much more than anyone I've ever known. You've become very important to me.
And you're afraid, Jim. What is it?
It's nothing. I just want you to be...
Nah, he just can't finish. Mr. Spock appears. He's carrying a burlap parcel. Quite long. It contains the phaser rifle, but we don't know it, so just forget I said that for a while. Yeah. He stops on the stairs. Kirk looks at him and draws away from Edith.
We'd better go upstairs. I have to go out for a while, or you better go upstairs. Because I've got to go out for a while.
Jim, if it's anything you've done, some trouble?
Nothing, Edith. I'll be back. Just stay in your room and... The door locked.
Please, Jim, tell me. I love you, James Kirk.
Kirk pauses upon hearing those words. Then his jaw muscles tighten. And he goes out the door. On the street, Kirk passes, sees Spock waiting. The burlap wrap, surprise for later, package is still in his arms. He moves into the alley. Spock is looking at him with silent condemnation.
Mr. Spock, are they still alive in the transporter chamber, Captain?
You don't understand. You're not...
I'm not what, Captain? A human subject to the pain and pleasures of love? No, I'm not. I'm merely concerned with saving the lives of the ones who trusted us.
I can't let her die. I can't.
Then Beckwith wins. Time has changed.
Spock starts past him. Kirk grabs his arm. The package slips out of Spock's grasp. It falls. And the phaser is revealed. Surprise!
It wasn't for Beckwith, was it, Mr. Spock?
Spock stares at him. They stand there across the sudden abyss of conflicting interests. Spock says nothing. He gathers up the phaser, rewards it, and leaves. Kirk's expression is of growing helplessness. Spock slips off into the shadows of the back street. There is a rustle behind him. He turns with phaser in hand, and Beckwith is there. The scuffle is only a moment in duration. With the two of them wrestling among wooden crates and cans and refuse, Spock falls. Beckwith grabs the phaser and dashes off. Spock gets up and follows. Beckwith snaps off his shot, and Spock dives clear of it. He looks up, but Beckwith is gone. Time is growing deathly. New York Street. We see a hand-lettered placard that reads, "I fought at Verdun." The sign is hung around the neck of a legless cripple, hunkered down on his stumps on a wooden pushboard that rolls on its wheels. His cap is pulled far down over his eyes, and someone begins to speak to him.
Are you a trooper?
I got some apples, fella. Maybe a pencil. I fought at Verdun.
Someone told me to come and see you.
I just sell apples and pencils.
Perhaps it's time for you to diversify your wares.
Who are you?
Kirk hunkers down next to him. Trooper looks nervous.
I'm just a beau who needs some information.
I don't know much. Except there's 9 guys on this block selling apples. Try them.
There's 2 bucks in it for a few words.
I didn't do nothing. I've been right here selling.
I'm not after you, mister. I want to find out something for me. I was told you know everything that goes on in this neighborhood.
How do I know you ain't crooked as a hairpin?
Take a $2 chance.
Jupiter ponders a moment, licks his lips, and nervously nods.
A man wearing peculiar clothes.
What kind of clothes?
Kirk looks around and pulls a parcel towards him. He opens it enough to show Trooper the Enterprise Comet insignia.
That's nice poking out there.
He'd be carrying a weapon.
What do you want for?
For about $2.
Let's see it. I suppose I gotta find out before you give it to me.
Kirk hands him the loot. There's a light in the Trooper's eyes for the first time.
Yeah, goodbye, apples and
pencils. I think I can trust a man who fought at Verdun.
There's disbelief and a kind of grandeur in the trooper's face as he is confronted with dignity, trust, and honesty, and hustle, and loyalty, and respect. He nods firmly as Kirk rises and watches as he leaves. Then, determined, gathers his things and propels himself down the sidewalk on his roller cart thing. Elegantly done, Kira. Edith's apartment. A little plain room. Feminine touches, but nothing very elegant or beautiful. She lives in the same simplicity of decency which she preaches. They're eating cake and having coffee.
Too rich?
Pardon?
The cake. Did I make it too rich?
No, it's delicious. I've never tasted anything like it before.
You've never tasted angel food cake before? Jim?
Yes?
I'd like to ask you a great many questions, but I'm afraid you might give me answers.
Kirk walks to the window and stares at the night sky. She follows.
A sky full of stars.
And you'll never know how many.
Are you going away, Jim?
Perhaps. I don't want to.
That Chinese fellow, isn't it?
See, this is why she's not a beautiful person, people.
In a way, I know him, and he knows me.
Edith turns him to her. She puts her arms around him, lays her head against his chest.
All my life, I've belonged to other people, and I know things will be cleaner, happier. I try to tell them so they'll wait, so they'll hope. But now I don't belong to anyone, and I'm losing my own hope, Jim.
He holds her away for a moment, speaks earnestly.
You're right. There are a million tomorrows. The one you believe in is the best one. I know.
How do you know?
Because I love you. And I know.
A knock on the door. They stand a moment. Another knock. Edith, look, loads of knocks. Edith looks at Jim. He nods at her to open it. She goes to the door. It's Spock. She steps aside. He doesn't come in. He just stares at Jim. Kirk nods and walks past Edith. He turns a beat to look at her. And then follows Mr. Spock out. A dim hallway, one light bulb glowing far down the passage.
The little man without legs was here.
That's just legs.
Beckwith.
You think so? Good chance.
Where is he? I have the address.
Kirk nods, and they go. In the New York street, a group of shadowy men wait in the corners and behind crates. Trooper is there, as Kirk and Spock come upon the group. As they arrive, the burly men in the shadows turn to look, and we catch their faces. The dregs, the gutter men, the outcasts.
The strong-arm types one sees on any skid row. We can almost smell the stench of sour rye and sweat.
He's back in there somewhere.
He's got the phaser, the weapon.
If he has, he isn't using it.
We can't let him kill anyone. The time flow...
Kirk nods.
Thanks. Now he's ours.
As the gutter men fade into the shadows, Kirk and Spock start down the alley, holding close to the wall, half in crouch, moving steadily, stealthily. Across the alley, past Kirk, we can see Spock moving like a mountain cat. Elegant. Suddenly, the garbage can comes clanging with night-shattering impact down on Spock. Beckwith is on a rooftop above him. He, as Kirk in the sights of the phaser. Spock is struggling as Kirk looks up and sees Beckwith. He realizes he's pinned against the wall and cannot escape. Okay. As Beckwith fires, a blur of movement from the alley mouth and Trooper is there, hurtling towards Kirk on his little cart. He hits Kirk dead center and the Enterprise captain is flung to safety. Trooper is hit, then gone. Spock springs to his feet. He grabs the garbage can and with incredible strength hurls it towards Beckwith. The can strikes Beckwith and he falls, dropping the phaser into the alley where it shatters into a cascade of sparks, burning itself out. Beckwith clambers to his feet and vanishes over the rooftops. Spock stands a beat, watching, then goes to Kirk, who is rising. They look down at the power-blasted spot where Trooper was vaporized.
Any death in this era that alters the time of intelligence alters time permanently or something. If he mattered in the time flow.
Why did he do that for you?
Because I gave him $2. Mr. Spock, you know history. Where is Verdun?
Spock does not answer. They stare down at the hand grip left by Trooper. New York Street, daytimes. Edith Keeler in her blue as sky cape with the sunburst on it. On her little dais, talking to a tiny crowd of half a dozen men and women.
There are great times on their way. Days of gold and nights cool and sweet smelling. This isn't the only happiness. This world turning under us. Look up tonight, see them all burning and smiling.
Kirk and Spock are standing beside one another, watching Edith from concealment again.
She speaks as though you've talked to her. She doesn't know who we are. Her ideas are years ahead of their time. Yes, my race has a word for her kind of person. Lyra, open. Yes, that too. Captain.
Edith finishes, the crowd leaves at once, and Kirk does not even wait for Spock to complete his sentence. He steps out where she can see him.
Note, this sequence is the heart of the climax, okay? It is imperative that the order of action and the angles on the close-ups be tight and specific. No camera work has been indicated here purposely, so the pace and layout of shots can be best developed by on-set choices.
Spock moves away, so Edith will not see him. Edith comes to the curb with a smile, waving across to Kirk. Kirk sees Beckwith emerging from a building. Beckwith does not see Kirk. The building is between Kirk and Spock, where he was now moved. A huge beer truck lumbers into the street as Edith steps off the curb. She doesn't see it. Kirk and Beckwith and Spock see the truck as it bears down on Edith. As though time, which is our primary subject here, we're being silently stretched to the point of unbearability. Beckwith starts towards the girl. Kirk face
Kirk's face twists in anguish as he starts towards Beckwith to stop him from saving Edith's life. He stops. His hand closes on empty air as it did when she fell down the stairs and he didn't help her that time because he's a jerk. And he cannot stop Beckwith. He will sacrifice everything for her. Spock sees what is happening. He moves towards Beckwith. The truck slips slowly, silently towards Edith. Spock reaches Beckwith and grabs him in a body lock that immobilizes him. Kirk's mouth opens with a scream. Edith laughs a word at Kirk. We hear the sound of the truck screeching as Kirk's face crumbles while he falls to his knees. All in slow motion, we see a close-up on Spock. A close-up on Edith. A close-up on the truck. And a close-up on Kirk. And we cut. And we hold. It was written 3 times. I'm not being dramatic. We hold on his face as we hear the sound of the truck screeching to a halt. As Kirk's face crumbles, we know what's happened.
He did.
He's not very alive anymore.
Excellent.
Planet of the Guardians. Kirk emerges from the time vortex. Behind him follows Spock with Beckwith in a judo hold.
Time has resumed its shape.
What of the death of the cripple?
He was negligible.
But he found Beckwith for us. He must have counted.
Not the eternal flow, the greater river.
Kirk, through all of this, stands there as if stunned by the hammer. His face is dead, like Edith. He cannot coordinate.
Everything is the same as before?
Everything!
Beckwith abruptly twists out of Spock's hold and without a moment's hesitation flings himself into the vortex. Spock gives a strange howl of frustration.
Ocean!
He went back. It's all been for nothing.
First Guardian. Paid by the same guy, by the way.
No!
Bushes in there. Old Earth,
1930. The vortex cannot be set for the same exact time twice. He has created a fracture and plunged into it.
And where is he? Escaped?
Not this time. He wanted forever. The vortex has given him forever. Like the Mobius strip that has no end, that curves back on itself eternally. He is locked in time.
Forever. He cannot escape.
His forever will be in the heart of an exploding sun. Nova. He has named his own doom.
Kirk's face twists in anguish as he starts towards Beckwith to... Never mind. Kirk's cabin. Kirk stares at the stars through a port. Note, if there's no port in the cabin, damn it, build one. This is the absolute essential to the scene and the tone of...
Is that right?
Fuck it, it'll do, yeah. He is now dressed in the Enterprise uniform.
Coordinates from the bridge, Captain.
Kirk does not turn around. Spock moves behind him.
Jim. Kirk slowly turns. The deadness in his eyes is there. Then a small change of expression tells us he is startled.
Mr. Spock, that's the first time you've ever called me anything but Captain.
On my world, the nights are very long. The sound of silver birds against the sky are very sweet. My people know there is always time enough for everything. You'll come with me for a rest. You'll feel comfortable there.
All the time in the world.
And filled with tomorrows.
He was negligible. He fought at Verdun and he was negligible. And her!
No, she wasn't negligible.
But I loved her!
No woman has ever loved as much, Jim. Because no woman ever offered the universe for love.
Kirk looks at him. There is an understanding in his face. A sadness he will never, ever lose. Because his loss is so great. But, through friendship and caring, Spock has shown him the way. The USS Enterprise, as the ship speeds off into the darkness, we say live long and prosper. Good night!
And that's how Star Trek Live went down. Pretty amazing, right? What did you think of the episode? As I mentioned at the start of part one, a version of the story actually made it to air, but there were some big differences. What I really liked about this version is pretty much the conflict over humanity that Kirk and Spock have. Spock takes like this immediate opinion on the behavior and the attitude of our species the second he gets to New York. And this really grates on Kirk, and it creates a nice tension that flows throughout the episode. I also thought it was really interesting in this version how Kirk lets Edith fall down the stairs. I mean, I don't like it in the way of like, let's push her down the stairs. I meant like narratively. It just adds an intriguing development to their ultra-fast relationship, which, because it's set in the 60s, people can fall in love like over a bank holiday. In the televised version, there actually is a similar scene, but Kirk catches Edith. I don't know, perhaps Joan Collins had an issue with rolling down the steps. And finally, I know it's not part of the story, but I absolutely loved the writer's notes that Harlan Ellison sprinkled throughout the script. I've never read a screenplay like this one. So many demands listed in the middle of the pages, we simply had to include this in the show. Even though I did thoroughly enjoy this episode, there are areas I'd like to highlight that needs improvement. Like, for instance, the first 20 pages were really tough to get through. So much back and forth between the Guardian and Kirk and Spock. I was itching for them to get to the point. And once they did, I felt like the episode kind of took off there and kind of finally started the flow. I also thought the Space Jewel's addiction drug thing at the beginning was really intriguing. I'm surprised they never did anything else with that. Once they set it up, I was like, oh, where is this going to go? Is this going to actually end up in New York City? But it never actually got there. Actually, in the televised version, a deranged McCoy is the person that goes back in time and not Beckwith. But I definitely wanted to see more of those space jewels. And maybe try out a couple for myself. But I suppose that ought to do it for our mini review of Star Trek Live. I do hope you enjoyed this episode. Please share it on Facebook and Twitter if you digged it. Oh, and if you're planning on attending Dublin Comic Con this year on August 6th, you're not going to want to miss our next Dynamic Live reading. That's right, we're actually one of the main events of Dublin Comic Con. But the question is, which abandoned Hollywood superhero blockbuster are we going to resurrect? Well, the only way to find out is if you're in attendance. So I'll catch you there. That about wraps it up. My name is Chris Brennan from Storybreakers. We will be back next week with a scheduled story that we come up with off the top of our heads. Until then, thanks for listening. I'll see you later.